One of the things I love about Judaism is that you're allowed to be disturbed by things in the Torah that you read. Anyone who reads the Torah and is not disturbed by it, the worst scoundrel is better than such a person. It's a Hasidic saying, because the idea is you should read Torah and not say, oh my gosh, I must follow exactly what it says. It is so holy, and I'm such a nothing. No, we know it's a partnership. The Torah is often there to get you thinking and to make you think, because it's the word and you are partners. And so on the one hand, I love that you can be upset and disturbed by some of the things, let's say what looks like ostracizing people who are sick or have had given birth to children or have had seminal emissions or whatever it is. You ostracize them. That seems very, very disturbing. On the other hand, I am an unabashed apologist in my middle age. It says a lot about you when you read Torah, what disturbs you and what doesn't. So, I mean, when you tell me something bothers you, I say, that tells me a lot about you. So tell me more. Why does that bother you, right? So it's like therapy, but it's like God therapy. And I'm like, this is very interesting. I understand what's going on inside you. So you're allowed to be disturbed, but it says a lot about you, about what disturbs you. When I look at the commentaries on this Torah portion, it's very interesting what disturbs people. So I want to point out what disturbs people, and then you may not be surprised to find that it doesn't disturb me. But you're allowed to be disturbed. Many of you are deeply disturbed, but we won't go into it. One of the commentaries I read was from Avital? Hochstein. She is the Torah commentary person this year for Machon Hadar, which is wonderful. They're an Orthodox organization. They're a cutting-edge Orthodox organization with brilliant Divrei Torah and ideas, and I love to read them. And this year, they have an Orthodox woman, which is kind of, you know, cutting-edge in these days and ages. And she wrote what I think is on many people's minds, that after the first line, where it says, one who has tzarat, one who has a skin eruption, one who has this disease, or we don't know if it's a disease, it's a symptom. One who has a skin eruption of the bad kind. After that first line, it never refers to the person. We have this long double parsha. The rest of it is either about the affliction itself, that if the tzarat has yellow scales, if the tzarat turned the skin white, if the tzarat goes beneath the skin, we never hear about the patient anymore, the person. And all of the seeing, we have tons of words for see and quarantine, they all apply to the Kohen who is examining the person. So it's kind of like the person walks into the doctor and never gets to be a person again. They just become a symptom and symptoms. And people come in, you know, have you ever been to the doctor? And the doctor's like, and this actually happened to me with a skin affliction I had on my head many years ago. I couldn't get it taken care of because I didn't have health insurance. And finally, I realized you can pay to get procedures done, which was a revelation. I didn't know you could call a doctor and be like, if I paid cash for something, what would it cost? And they would tell you. I thought it was like a system you were shut out of if you didn't have health insurance. And so I found out it was $300. I had what's called a wen. I don't know if you know what a wen is. I don't even know what a wen is. But it is a benign thing on your head, on your skin. And so I went to get it taken off, and the guy called in everyone in the practice. He's like, you never get to see a wen. Everybody come in. You know, all these people are parading. I swear it's true. Everyone's parading in. He's showing the assistant, the person who runs, you know, the x-ray machines come in. You gotta take a look at this, you know. And I'm sitting there like I'm this object, and they're all making fun of my wen, you know, which is like this bump on my head. He takes it off in a minute, you know, $300 later, everyone has a laugh. The second I went in, it was like, you're Nadav Kane, fine. After that, I never existed. So this is what Avital writes, which is Ms. Hochstein. So she writes that never referred to again. The person's never heard again. The subject of every sentence is either the people looking or the symptoms themselves. And she said, we all look and we examine, but where's the person? And she just kind of ends that, like, this parsha should make us think about that. I was kind of waiting for something else. But she ends with that. Okay. It's another view. So it tells me, what? She's bothered. Patient's forgotten. The rabbis. The rabbis, whom I rarely quote here because I don't like their view, let's say in the Talmud, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yannai are the main proponents. They actually say something I should be more sympathetic to. Mitzora, the person with tzara, sounds a lot like Motzei Ra, Motzei Shem Ra. And they say it must be related to gossip, that people get these things if they gossip. Now, I used to think, like, oh, I can't stand this stuff. A patient did something wrong. Like, you're blaming the patient. You know what I mean? I hate when you blame the patient for having a disorder. And I've gotten blamed before. So you guys know I don't have the best skin. And every time I used to go to, at one point where I had health insurance, my general would not give me a referral for a dermatologist because kept saying, it's stress. It's stress. Stress causes your skin to erupt in red patches like rosacea. And he said, it's stress. I felt blamed. Do you know what I mean? It's like, dude, if you could just relax, it would go away. And I hate that. I hate getting blamed for my own like skin disorders. Like it's somehow my inability to find, you know, to be at one with God. If only I could say om, then my skin disorder would go away. I hate that. And I don't think it's fair. And I think a lot of us, you go in with, I don't know, some disorder, you got gastroenteritis or you got reflux. And they're like, well, Marilyn, if you could just relax, it would go away. And I'm like, hey, don't you have a pill for this? I mean, can I get a little bit more help than somehow it's my lack? Because I think it's your ignorance more than it's my moral failings or spiritual failings. And so actually, the rabbis are not doing a terrible thing here, because what they're saying is it's not right to think that someone would get skin afflictions that's out of their control. And they'd have to go through this whole process of being like, you're examined and you're sent out of the camp and then you're purified and you're brought back into the camp and you're reintegrated. Like, it's not fair that that should be beyond your control. So whereas I hate when people say, it's probably in your control to make your reflux go away, the rabbis are actually saying, let's empower it. It's empowering to say, you can holistically try things to make it go away. You can. So it's an interesting debate. That their debate is, could it possibly be your fault that the Kohanim are going to send you out of the camp and then bring you back? And so they say, must be a moral failing that you can control, like evil speech, like spreading, your mouth. The later rabbis picking up on this do an even more interesting, the Hasidim take a more interesting view. The Sfat Emet, a 19th and 20th century Polish brilliant Hasidic commentator on the Torah, quotes the Kli Yakar, an early generation Hasidic commentator on the Torah from the 17th century, as saying, this is kind of like therapy. It's a matter of holiness. And it's not doctors, it's Kohanim. Then maybe it's that you get sick when you don't motzi ra, when you don't bring out when you don't deal with your demons. Motzi ra is bringing out the evil inside you. You got to get out your demons. You got to go to therapy. You got to do the work. You got to pray hard. And when you do that, like it erupts in you, and it could have physical manifestations. But if you do that, eventually you can get cured. You know, I mean, you know, if you go to your therapist, you feel better. So it's about healing and returning to the camp. And I'm going to quote one other person who had a Jewish Theological Seminary of America sent out Professor Joy Ladin or Ladin's Dvar Torah. This is what disturbed her about it, and I'll tell you why it doesn't disturb me. She's a transgender person, and she is a lecturer at the Jewish Theological Seminary, the conservative seminary in New York City. And she is a professor of English at Yeshiva University. So Yeshiva University is an Orthodox, and she's the only transgender person there that I believe who at least teaches. And to their credit, she is not removed from her post or anything. You know, they know that she's transgender, and she's got her job. And she said, when I read this parsha, I kind of go back to Avital Hochstein. I kind of like, do you know what it's like to be physically examined all the time? People are coming up to you and looking up and down. They're like, wait, there's something not right about you. Like, is that facial hair real? Or are you one of those where you took shots to get it? Right? It's like, look, are you a girl who became a guy? Are you a guy who became a girl? Are you just kind of a weird looking girl? Are you just a weird looking guy? You know, like, and she's like, I know exactly what it means that For a moment you exist as a person, and then the rest is all visual surveillance. And people judge you by how they're examining you. And she's like, and I can't help feeling like, how did they, and then to know whether they should exclude you, right? And to know whether you should be excluded because, you're one of those transgenders, you're outside of our circle, so you gotta go outside the camp. She's like, it kind of makes me feel like during the Holocaust when Jews were determined who was Jewish largely by visual inspection, you know, whether it was circumcision or it was just qualities. I mean, you know, I mean, the Nazis had these charts. They would look at the length of your nose. They had all these, you know, biological, anatomical explanations and the swarthiness of your hair. And that's why some people survived who were fair-haired and stuff, because they passed the visual inspection. So she's like, sent outside the camp? And so she's like, I kind of feel like I know how that feels. What it means to be treated as an object and then judged for being put outside the camp. She kind of feels like with immigration sweeps, when you're kind of looking around, you're like, who looks like they don't belong here, you know? And so she also is very disturbed by the portion about that. But then she ends in a very interesting way. And I think that people miss the very end of her essay. She says, but you know, there's something else when I look at this Torah portion. I say, I feel all of that, but at the same time, I notice four things. Number one, that the Torah portion is only talking about temporary physical conditions. Right? The Nazis were looking at permanent features of you. The people who examined the transgender are trying to say, what was your birth gender? What's on your birth certificate? None of this is about temporary conditions like sickness that will go away. It's all about permanent features. The Torah is only talking about temporary things, eruptions, discolorations, etc., discharges. Number two, these conditions could affect anyone. So it's not looking to identify a subgroup in the community to exclude them, because anyone can have a discharge. Anyone can have a skin discoloration. Number three, there's a mechanism for returning to the community. Is it really about exclusion or is it really about inclusion? And number four, although cross-dressing, the closest thing we have in the Torah about transgender is that a man can't dress as a woman, is that while it's a toeva, while it's a taboo, there is no removal from the community for doing it at all. It's just like, God doesn't like it when you do that. Okay, let's move on. So there is no examination, there's no removal. I think the last paragraph of what she says, not to be unsympathetic, is the most important part. That for people who are disturbed by the parsha, they're missing exactly those four points. Number one, the whole purpose of these double parsha is about inclusion. They're all about creating a mechanism where someone who has eruptions and discharges and other things to have a system in which they're examined and acknowledged, in which through the priesthood, through holiness, through they are temporarily put outside the camp to heal or to be attended to. They're not chucked out there to die. And then that is only the middle step of the process of reintegrating them. It is a full circle. And when they get reintegrated, it is public. It is at the center. It couldn't be any center than in the middle of the tabernacle and the Kohen saying, you are back in, my friends. You are part of us. You are fully holy and pure. That's a pretty major announcement. Right? There are people who are like, well, our synagogue or our church will tolerate the transgender person, but we don't really like them on the bima. You know what I mean? Like to think that you're talking about these sick people are brought back up to the middle, be like, this person's pure. I don't know about you all. We haven't examined you, but this person's A+. So it's about the process of including them. It's later in the Talmud, we get the fact that the worst evil is to take sick people and poor people and hungry people and put them outside the temple gates where Elijah hangs out with them, wondering why no one is reintegrating them back into society. So Eliyahu HaNavi judges whether the Messiah is going to come, whether we're worthy of Messiah, based on the fact that are we reintegrating the people who are sick, or are we leaving them outside the gates? So the whole point is the re-entry, and that's what we're judged by. And so when I read the portion, I think of something else. Which is not that, isn't it terrible that this patient with skin issues and eruptions, discharges, whatever, this person is being looked at like an object. how dare we poke and prod and look at them? And I can't believe that that bothers people in an age where we do not have universal access to healthcare. There are an awful lot of sick people, and I used to be one of them, that would have loved to have been poked and prodded and objectified by doctors. I would have loved to have been have access where someone was required, paid for by the community, like the Kohanim are not like private specialists, where the Kohen was required to examine me and tell me if I'm in bad shape and then send me to a place where I could get better and then reintegrate me into society. And so I find it fascinating that people are so disturbed and they're like, it's like the Nazis, for God's sake. And I'm like, what are you talking about? How many people would love to be examined? They're just examining them. It's so impersonal. Well, I'm afraid doctoring is a little bit like that. And yes, I'm not crazy about the guy bringing in, you know, all of the assistants to look at my wen, but at the same time, it wasn't that bad. My favorite thing about the whole experience was I got treated, right? Like, thank God. You know, and so I think that it is very strange in a society where we debate access to healthcare, Republican or Democrat, whatever bill it is, I think people look at it, say, how many people are covered, how many people are not covered, blah, 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 blah. And yet people read this parsha and all they can see is, oh, people being poked and prodded for their physical manifestations and then reintegrated into the community in a holy way, paid for by the tithes to the community. It just disturbs me. I can't read it that way. So many choose to read this section of the Torah and be disturbed by the notion of people being visually inspected and then excluded from society. But the rabbis of the Talmud understood that that's the exact opposite of what this section is about. It's about looking at the people that no one wants to look at and inspecting them of their problems when no one wants to treat them. And providing a way in which they can be helped and then included by the Kohanim themselves, declared holy before the whole community. And that's why the rabbis pair it with a haftarah of a very strange story from 2 Kings, in which several men afflicted with tzaraat are outside the city gates, kept outside, and they end up saving the entire kingdom in a fluke from destruction by the Aramean army. And at the end of this bizarre and wonderful tale, a strange accident happens in which a particular man is trampled to death in bizarre fashion. And that concludes the Haftarah. Who was this man trampled to death? He was the gatekeeper of the city. The gatekeeper who keeps those out from being included and treated. And he ends up the villain. May we not be like that gatekeeper. May we be the ones who look at those and treat those that want to be seen and find ways for them to be declared holy before the entire community.